This lecture is supported by Simply Hops, a leading supplier of hops and hops pellets for the UK and Europe. Buy your hops, pellets, PHA, anti-foam, yeast and more from Simply Hops. Go to simplyhops.co.uk.
The Brewers Lectures!
Dr. Bill Simpson is the developer of the world's first reference beer flavour standard systems, used to train more than 15,000 professional beer tasters globally since 1996. Now increasingly used to train professional sensory assessors in the areas of water, soft drinks, wine, spirits, and various foods. These materials help ensure that sensory tests carried out in industry are as objective as possible. Bill is an experienced brewing technology professional, microbiologist, sensory expert, and founder of several beer industry support companies. As managing director of Cara Technology Limited, and prior to that as principal scientist at the Brewing Research Foundation, he has advised more than 500 medium to large breweries in 70 countries. Bill has also authored or co-authored more than 110 scientific papers, book chapters, and patent specifications. Please welcome Bill.
Good morning, everyone. I've got a rather unusual title this morning. I'm going to talk about disasters. My reason for talking about disasters is to try and make them a little less likely for the beer industry in the future. Now, some of you may be thinking, well, what does a disaster mean in the beer industry? What can possibly go wrong when you're brewing beer? Well, I've got a few little stories here which maybe will be some that you'll be familiar with and some maybe a little bit of a surprise to you. I'm going to cover four areas: a bit about yeast, a bit about malt, a bit about adjuncts, and a bit about additives. Hops are getting let off today. I'm looking forward to draw some lessons, but actually, overall, I want you to go away from this talk paranoid. And if you're paranoid, you'll be a little bit more vigilant, a little bit more circumspect, a little bit more careful. I don't want to make you, stop being innovative. I just want you to step back now and again and think, what's the worst that could happen? So this is really a story of the worst that could happen. Let's talk about yeast. First of all, a pretty recent story. I'll call it the Belgian incident. Not because it happened in Belgium, but because it creates a flavor reminiscent of Belgian beers. To summarize, this really, I put the location as USA, but in fact, it happened in many places in the USA. It also happened outside of the USA. A problem related to the flavor of product, a problem related to the integrity of product, bottles that may blow up. The problem was contaminated yeast. Yeast being supplied by at least one brewing yeast supplier, perhaps more than that, contaminated with Saccharomyces cerevisiae, variety diastaticus. Now, that kind of strain is used to make some types of Belgian beers, say Saisons, for example. However, when it occurs as a contaminant in American-style ales, it produces abnormal flavours. It makes the beer smell and taste Belgian. That's due to flavours, phenolic flavours like styrene, 4-vinylguaiacol, that's cloves or carnations and plastic, and ethyl acetate. It smells like solvent or glue. If you're making a nitrogenated product, like one customer was in the USA, it spoils your nitrogen effect. Your bubbles go up rather than go down. It also gives you over-attenuation. It produces an enzyme called glucoamylase that causes the beer to over-ferment. That makes your alcohol go up, your CO2 go up, and your bottles to blow up sometimes at people's face. Now, in fact, this has been billed as a problem with a yeast supplier. But to be honest, it's not. The yeast supplier was just a little part of the story. This is a problem of breweries thinking that if I bought yeast from a supplier, what can possibly go wrong? Surely I don't need to do any checks. Surely I don't need to taste my beer or check my beer for microbiology. Well, the news is you do, because many breweries had to recall beer from the market because of this little issue. I'll single out one to tell you about it because it's pretty much in the public domain. Many other brewers have been affected but haven't talked much about it. But the one I'll pick actually happened in Chicago. I was delivering a training course in Chicago that week, when the biggest brewing company in Chicago, it's only been around for a few years now, Revolution Brewing, had to recall 10,000 barrels of beer. They make less than 100,000 barrels of beer per year, so that was a pretty big recall for them. They make American-style craft beer. and they really realised that they were making Belgian-style craft beer by accident. Their owners, Death and Seaback, said, "We believe these off flavours were produced by a wild yeast that has gotten worse over time and was not identified in time by our quality control methods." In other words, it said, "It's our bad. We really should have been on top of this. We weren't paying attention. Asleep at the wheel, maybe." It had quite an effect on the owners. He said, "It's like a death in the family." Yeah, it's like a death in the family where you've left something really dangerous in your house and you should have been more careful. And it's not the only company that's been affected. We've had Left Hand Brewing in Colorado. We've had Bells have given a talk at the Craft Brewers Convention about their impact of this organism. What's quite odd among the craft brewing community is how many people said, "This is all a big surprise. Who knew that could happen? This is an organism that's almost impossible to detect," someone told me. Except it was published in 1952 in the Journal of the Institute of Brewing, the first description of this organism, really culminating in knowing about it for many decades until someone finally did a scientific investigation and called it Saccharomyces diastatagus. It's an easy bug to detect. And in fact, it almost wiped out attempts to brew beer continuously here in the UK in the 1960s. Fermenters were continuously contaminated with this bug. People got really good at detecting it. But the industry forgets, and it's the forgetting that puts us at risk. At risk not just of exploding bottles, but at risk of lawyers, and there's nothing more scary than a US lawyer. And just the week before last, Left Hand Brewing mounted a lawsuit against their yeast supplier, White Labs in this case, alleging huge losses, $2 million of product, and they're looking for very much more. They're probably looking for about $20 million. In fact, they're looking for more money than White Labs have. It probably will not end well for either party. I have to say, historically, what usually happens is the supplier wins, because it's usually the responsibility of the user to confirm the suitability of the product that they're making use of. The lessons learned. Quality tests aren't just a nice to have. I've heard so many times people saying, "Yeah, we don't really want to set up a taste panel. We don't want to buy a lab instrument. We don't want to do microtesting. We're busy spending money on marketing." Well, that's fine, but you have to protect your marketing investment too. You need some kind of tests. They're an essential tool rather than nice to have. And suppliers sometimes get things wrong. You need a second check rather than simply rely on the supplier. So that's probably the nicest story I'll tell you about. Nobody died. The Carbon Island incident, Bolt, 1985. And what's unusual about this one, unlike the one about Saccharomyces cerevisiae diastatagus, where you can find lots of info on the internet, there's pretty much nothing about this on the internet. I was thinking the other day, did I imagine this? Because I was around when this happened, though not in 1966. This happened in Australia. And it started one morning with a group of tasters at Carlton United Breweries tasting their beers. And they usually went through the system of going, "Yep, she'll be right, this seems good." But one person said, "No, I just can't. One of these samples, you just can't hack it, it's really bad." So they sort of dismissed it as only one person of eight. By the end of the week, this one taster was rejecting all the company's beer. The panel leader wasn't very sure what to do, so he set up a trial where he had the different beers the panel member had been complaining about, and then some older beers. The panelists could always pick it out. He couldn't describe the flavour, he just said it was absolutely disgusting. So what they did was, they went along to the head brewer, said, "What do you think we should do, boss?" The boss said, "Give it to me to taste." He said, "That's absolutely fine, send it out. What can possibly go wrong?" What can possibly go wrong is that the barley they were using to malt was then contaminated with a barley storage pesticide called carbaryl. The yeast converted carbaryl to 1 naphthol. 1 naphthol spoiled the taste of the beer that could only be detected by 1 in 8 people. So carbaryl was used to try and stop weevils growing in the grain. In fact, the machine that Jeff showed you earlier that was used to braid barley, originally the design was used to take weevils out of grain. But scientists came up with the idea, why not use a chemical? The chemical was approved for use in barley, malting barley, in 1984 on the basis of 2 trials at the Brewing Research Foundation, one with an ale yeast, one with a lager's yeast, and they decided it's fine to use. Australia were the first to get malted barley on which carbaryl had been applied. That's carbaryl, that chemical compound on the right. Carbaryl is still in use today. It's used on wheat, it's used on a whole range of other cereals, but it's not used in malting barley. Traces of Carbarella survive the malting process, and some yeast strains convert them into one naphthol. One naphthol is what you find in mothballs. When you have low levels in beer, it gives a really horrible flavour to the beer. But it's not horrible for everyone. Only 1 in 8 people find it bad, but that 1 in 8 find it absolutely disgusting. They think they've been poisoned. They haven't. However, 1 in 8 people having your beer who think they've been poisoned leads to a lot of telephone calls, a lot of emails. There was no email in those days, though, but a lot of complaints, and it gets your name in the newspaper. And in the case of CUB, it led to the largest product recall in the history of the beer world at that time. So the lessons? Well, just because something's been approved by an authority doesn't mean that nothing can go wrong. So it's buyer beware. Do your test to make sure it's okay. CUB's competitor in the market, called Lion Nathan at that time, were unaffected. Their yeast strain did not convert Carbarell into naphthol. None of their yeast strains. So CUB got rather unlucky. Really unintended consequences here. Nobody intended to make malted barley that would destroy the brewer's beer, but the testing was aimed at checking safety. Only safety. And that's pretty true of all agrochemicals. No one's trying to foresee an effect on the product quality. That's for you to test. Disregarding any minority, 1 in 8 leads to very big consequences in terms of product recalls. And now go back a little more in time. I wasn't there at the time, 1900, but this is an interesting incident, the arsenic incident. You probably guess what it involves by now. I first read about the arsenic incident by reading an old journal of the Institute of Brewing, where no one mentioned what it was. They simply mentioned the arsenic incident, or the incident, they called it. And it was very hard to find info. Nowadays, with the internet, it's very easy to find info, and you should really take a look. There's some great papers about it. What happened was, 1900 to early 1901, north of England, Manchester, Salford, Liverpool, customers poisoned with arsenic. They were using glucose, syrup, and invert sugar, that's sucrose that's been converted into glucose and fructose, to stop it going solid. And the supplier of the glucose syrup and sucrose syrup to breweries called Bostock, a company based in Liverpool, used contaminated sulfuric acid to make the syrup. The contaminated sulfuric acid was supplied by their supplier in Leeds, a company called Nicholson. The 200 breweries supplied by Bostock were supplying their customers with beer with loads of arsenic. The actual sugar syrup contained 0.5 gram per kilogram of arsenic. It was absolutely huge. The beers had tens of milligrams of arsenic in them. At least 70 people died. That's a vast underestimate. It was probably hundreds of people died. At least 6,000 people were seriously injured. Again, a vast underestimate. It was probably 70 to 200,000 people affected. The 70 deaths, by the way, were simply where there was a coroner said the beer killed them. But most people were misdiagnosed. They died of heart failure or things that look as if they had chronic alcoholism, even though in some cases they only drank 0.5 pint per day. It resulted in a Royal Commission, the very first Royal Commission, and the first legal limit for a poisonous substance in any food or beverage anywhere in the world. So that's one good thing that came about anyway. How would you like to wake it up in the morning and that's the headline in your local newspaper? Poisoning in Manchester, remarkable revelations, arsenic in beer. That's the Manchester Evening Chronicle. The problem was the beer market in 1900, dominated by cask and bottle beer, almost all products primed with sugar to get a secondary fermentation, and sucrose as adjunct was widely used, 25% of the grist quite typically, even though it was more expensive than malt at the time. And Bostock's were a very successful sugar syrup supplier. In fact, they'd had a management buyout only 7 years earlier. They were doing great. Things couldn't be better for them. They relied on their supplier to send them sulfuric acid that was good enough to make food quality syrup to supply to breweries. They also made sugar syrups for supply to the food industry. But it turned out the supplier switched the type of sulfuric acid, the source of it. They switched from oil of vitriol to iron pyrites. Iron pyrites is also called fool's gold, maybe particularly appropriate here. In fact, their supplier said they should have known this. First of all, it's a different colour. The sulfuric acid is green when you make it from iron pyrites. Why didn't they notice? Bostock's had a chemist. The chemist didn't notice the change in colour, didn't respond to it, and the chemist didn't test for arsenic, even though they knew it was a risk. This wasn't something that was completely out of the blue. In fact, in 1897, a French brewer had said, someday somebody's going to die from drinking beer contaminated with arsenic. Somebody's going to die. And everyone said, well, he's just trying to stir the mess here. You know, nothing's going to happen. It's alarmist. In fact, he's only saying that because he brews all malt beers. It's vested interest. Well, it turned out he was right. A lot of people died. And this Royal Commission, published in 1901, and Bostock sued the supplier as well. The Royal Commission was chaired by Lord Kelvin. He's also known as William Thompson, the guy who penned the second and third laws of thermodynamics and helped lay the telegraph cable to America. He concluded 6,000 injured at least, but said that's a vast underestimate, at least 70 dead. Bostock sued the suppliers I mentioned. They lost. Well, they didn't lose completely. They got back the money they'd spent on the sugar syrup. But too late. They were in administration. They were gone, never to be seen again. Lessons learned. Responsibility for the safety of the beer sold to the public lies, first of all, with retailers, second of all, with distributors, and last of all, with brewers. The suppliers aren't accountable for the consequences of how their products are used by others. Interesting applying that to the yeast case I mentioned earlier. And ignorance of the potential consequences of supplier changes can have dire consequences. So you think from that, well, that would never happen again. Well, actually, it happened 2 years later, but this time in Halifax. So even though we had a Royal Commission, we knew all about it, it still happened again. And the same thing then happened once again, 1965, this time called the Cobalt Incident. Again, you probably guessed what's involved. This time in Canada, the location Quebec, where a brewing company called the Dow Company was using cobalt chloride. Cobalt chloride was widely used as a foam stabilizer and to prevent gushing or overcarbonation of beer. It was FDA approved in the US and considered safe. In fact, you could eat several teaspoons of cobalt chloride and you'd be absolutely fine. It wasn't dangerous. However, Dow operated two breweries, one in Montreal, one in Quebec. The brewery in Quebec used 10 times more than the brewery in Montreal. It was probably just a calculation error. In my years consulting for breweries, I often find people use the wrong amount of stuff, and it's never an odd number. It's usually 10 times too much or 10 times too little. It's the basic thing that many people cannot count. And this probably happened here, 10 times too much. As a result, people died. They stopped adding cobalt to beer. The FDA banned it. There was big losses in market share for the breweries affected. Breweries in Brazil, breweries in Belgium, breweries in Canada, breweries in North America, and there were brewery closures. The original idea came from the Alfred Young's Laboratory, a company that we now own. But that company at the time invented this new patent for stopping beer gushing and for improving the foam. Patented it in 1957. The Dow Company was hugely successful, a brewery with a planetarium. The round thing there is a planetarium. That's when you know you've made it, when you got your own planetarium. However, it's about not knowing what's going to happen. If you look on here, we have here the people affected consumed regularly an average of 25 pints of beer per day. The FDA considerations did not consider people might drink 25 pints of beer per day. In the case of one, I've singled it out, one patient, a truck driver, I'll say that again, one patient, a truck driver, drank an average of 20 quarts of beer daily. That's 40 pints of beer per day, and they're a truck driver. A committee deciding how much would be safe isn't going to think of that. So the Dow Brewery took immediate action. They said, right, that's it. We're closing the brewery. No discussion. The brewery is dead. The lessons learned. Read the instructions. FDA approved doesn't mean safe. Think about edge case consumers, because in fact, what actually caused the cobalt problem was not cobalt. If you were eating three meals a day and drinking beer with cobalt, you'd be absolutely fine. The problem is that there's a vitamin in beer called thiamine, which is unstable. So beer with the yeast removed does not contain thiamine. And if you only live on beer, you become thiamine deficient, a disease called beriberi. Before you get beriberi, you become extremely sensitive to cobalt. And as a result, you die. Your heart stops, your lungs stop working. So rather ironically, if this cobalt had been used, Way back in 1900, when the arsenic incident happened, with yeast in the beer, everyone would have been fine. It was the two things together that caused the problem. So to conclude, when you're being a little bit paranoid, go back to your teams and try and think creatively. What's the worst that could happen? Assume absolutely nothing. Check things for yourself. Analyze the risk. And nowadays, just search the internet and take responsibility, because don't leave it to the experts. They've got a bad track record. But the good thing is, we can learn from lessons past. We got many years of brewing science, and hopefully many more years to come. Thank you. I'll leave you. I'll leave you just with this one quote from Donald Rumsfeld. I think it applies very well to this particular case.
Thank you very much, Bill.
The Brewers Lectures!
This lecture is supported by Simply Hops, a leading supplier of hops and hops pellets for the UK and Europe. Buy your hops, pellets, PHA, anti-foam yeast and more from Simply Hops. Go to simplyhops.co.uk.